interrupting the current neo-Ukronio, climate-challenged, behaviorally controlled, energy-starved, alien-invaded, nuclear-glowing, postulated cricketism to bring you behind the woodshed. This is Cricketude Busting episode BTWRLM 640. And remember, being free is not a spectator sport. And I almost can't get this noostis out of my mouth anymore as it occurs almost as I'm saying it, just after I'm saying it. Pretty fascinating what's going on. Recapping from last episode to bring this up along, the Wicked of Oz. Trump administration is launching a new private health tracking system with big tech's help. Promoted as having seamless access to health app data, such as what patients are eating and how much they are exercising, will also help doctors manage obesity and other chronic diseases. These apps give us insight about what's happening with the patient's health outside of the physician's office. So I want to reiterate the tracking, the tracing, the monitoring everywhere by strangers doing strange things in the Siberian gulag of the 21st century. The CMS already has troves of information on more than 140 million Americans who enroll in Medicare and Medicaid. Earlier this month, the federal agency agreed to hand over its massive database, including home addresses, to deportation officials. Should be a red flag, no? You say you have a Second Amendment? Not for long. Don't you have a right to not testify against yourself as well? That's gone too. The initiative would deepen the pool of information on patients for the federal government and tech companies. Medical records typically contain far more sensitive information, such as doctors' notes about conversations with patients and substance abuse or mental health history. Quote, this scheme is an open door for the further use and monetization of sensitive and personal health information. So this is the monetization of your life, is how Trump intends to make digital health ecosystems great again. Not America, and certainly not you, because you are the product. And as I said last week about the mental health checks that I mentioned, but they were not part of those reports. They will be part of your token citizenship, however, and the fantabulous digital track, trace, monitoring, and intervention system using your health as a warm and fuzzy excuse to control your behavior. Remember I was asking about the Second Amendment just a moment ago? Mental health? Remember your red flag laws? And through a big tech system that they're going to help us with, where, quote, there are enormous ethical and legal concerns and that patients across America should be very worried that their medical records are going to be used in ways that harm them and their families. Remember, you've ever heard of Harma? Maybe behind a woodshed? Maybe the only place. And we get to this story this week. It happened just days after I mentioned this mental health check. Remember, it's from cradle to grave as they move it along as they can. Illinois becomes the first state to require student mental health screenings. Illinois Governor J.B. Pritzker signed the bill into law on Thursday. For students in Illinois, mental health screenings will soon be required alongside annual vision and hearing exams. Illinois Governor J.B. Pritzker signed a bill into law Thursday that will require public school students to grades 3 through 12 in the state to undergo a mental health screening each year. Pritzker also said the new legislation makes Illinois the first state to mandate universal mental health assessments for public school students. Quote, our goal is an integrated, comprehensive approach to quality mental and behavioral health services for young people across the state, saying the legislation will pave the way for schools to receive resources and support to implement the new push for screenings. It sounds like a bit of a bribe to me. Into the future that they want, going right after the innocent little ones to monitor your behavior for the health of their digital ecosystem, right, Trump? Oh, geez, what am I asking? Trump did say he does not know nothing about it, didn't he? Absolutely zero, he said. You heard that last episode. And he said that he didn't want to know. In particular, he said he didn't want to know about any problems. So, never mind, Donald. As I said last episode, your mental fitness will be tested, monitored, and assessed, and social networking will be one of the windows of the exploitation for that test the big tech will have direct access to. Again, this third-party liability to people, strangers, you don't know, doing strange things. This is so coming down just so fast on all this now. It's hard to really keep up with it. Pretty soon, it's not going to be much for this broadcast to be able to keep up. You really ought to just go to the news and find, as I've done it, find the news to you and start responding, because it may become too late for what I can offer much of anything to anybody. But this is coming along. And these little ones today won't know any different than the new normal their mothers and fathers allowed to befall them. Consent of the governed, they tell us. See how easy it is? We the people being taken over without firing a shot, with Trump's help. The bill, SB 1560, encourages schools to connect students, caregivers, and parents with the Behavioral Health Care and Ongoing Navigation, or BEACON, porthole. A deep hole, the abyss, portal, a tool launched in January that could provide information about available mental health resources and services. Illinois' move comes 2 months after the Trump administration pulled funding for about $1 billion Bravo dollars into mental health grants. You might ask, how is it with Trump's help? Remember, Trump is causing a reorganization of the criminal syndicate and funding, not an elimination. Health matters are reserved to the states. This reorganization makes it very much more difficult to defeat, being it's a state-level initiative. And where the databases are being universally treated nationally under Trump's CMS digital health tech ecosystem, as they call it. The state is also promising schools free screening. It's free, folks. Free screening tools and access to technology to fulfill the mandate. Another mandate. What do you think that free, oh, so convenient technology is going to be? Something the state has designed, or the private tracking system provided to the states that big tech designed for this public-private fascist control grid from cradle to grave? It's for the children, of course. So simple, so easy. And going global. Almost as if overnight. Because it's actually been going on right under the nose of everyone, everywhere, for a while. Just as you've been told behind the witch hat. Mexico makes biometric identifier mandatory for all citizens. Mexico has officially introduced a digital identification system by signing a law that turned the previous optional biometric based citizen code into a mandatory document for all citizens. Citizen is a subject. You're not free. Citizens. Last month, legislators, doing the legislating, approved amendments to a law related to the 18-character personal identifier known as the Unique Population Registry Code, with the change formalized on Wednesday through a decree. The mandatory CURP will contain personal and biometric information, including a photograph and a QR code containing biometric fingerprint and iris data. The identifier is expected to be introduced gradually to all Mexicans by February of 2026. That all-important QR product identification code right there. Didn't hear much about it last week, but here it starts to come this week. As they start to roll out the implementation of what was just an idea we didn't know about just a couple of years ago. Remember, I explained the commercial origins of the UPC code in a long past episode, the International Universal Barcode they use, from which the QR code is derived for more data for tracking and tracing and keeping tabs. The government has also allowed the consolidation of citizens' codes into a single identity platform that would be connected to other state databases and administrative records. You see how big this state becomes real fast? According to the decree, the Ministry of Interior and Digital Transformation Agency must create a unique identifier platform within 90 days, while public and private institutions will be required to update their system to recognize the identifier. They already got the buy-in in the United States, if you think that Mexico's just behind. The country also plans to kickstart a national program to collect biometric data from children and adolescents within 120 days, according to news outlet Mexico Business. CURP raises surveillance suspicions. They say here in the report, I guess they're going to tamp down the disaster this is going to be. Just suspicions. The first CURP was issued in 1996, if you thought this was just this year, allowing both citizens and residents to use it in tax filings, company records, schools, passport applications, and other government services. The biometric version of the code began rollout at the beginning of 2025. Incremental creepiness here. 1996. I've been telling you, all this stuff's been in the system, in the pipeline, being worked on. Everybody gets used to it. You see, the very first thing they're listed is taxes. I told you that about Russia, the same thing. They're using it, initiating it as a tax return, a tax ability, a tax tracker to start with. The United States is going to go a different route. They're going to get you all warm and fuzzy how much health they're going to give to you, they say. Privacy advocates, however, viewed the introduction of the mandatory biometric ID with suspicion, raising concerns that the CURP will lead to surveillance and data security issues. All I can say there is no duh. Like I said, I could do a broadcast if I was well interested, a broadcast for 2 hours, probably every day on all the security and data related issues in the interwebs and about the interwebs and your computers and all that. And it's just so much, you can read it for yourself. It's not really that interesting. It's the vulnerability. The new law, for instance, does not require authorities to inform citizens when their data is viewed or accessed. We just heard it's going to be monetized. Quote, this puts us in a massive surveillance ecosystem with no provisions to identify wrong use of data, data breaches, identity theft, or acts of corruption. Jose Flores, director of the digital rights group R3D, told Context News. CUPR could also allow Mexico to establish data sharing agreements with other countries, including a deportation deal with the United States law enforcement agencies. You're tying this up to the last tab. Here we are. And I said, wait, what, till you see how big states get here. It's global. Nation states is what they end up talking about. And you're seeing the evidence right here. Trump's tying it right into it. Rights groups such as Article 19 believe that the ID will give intelligence services access to data without restrictions or transparency. Mexico's national security agencies such as the National Intelligence Center and the National Guard are among the government bodies that will gain access to biometric data. And another story on this, a little different information, different nuance. Mexico mandates biometric digital ID by 2026. Mexico mandates biometric CURP IDs with fingerprints, iris scans, and photos under Claudia Sheinbaum's national ID overhaul. It's modernization right there is what they're doing. But Sheinbaum, I wonder if she knows the folks at Palantir or the Mossad or Senyehu. By chance. Mexico has formally mandated the use of new biometric-based digital ID system, making compulsory a previously voluntary identification mechanism known as the Unique Population Registry Code. Under the new law, the CURP IDs will now incorporate detailed personal biometric records, including fingerprints, iris scans, and photographs embedded within that QR code. And I keep bringing it, I wanted to repeat this story. Similar, it's the same report, different little bit of highlights. But I told you about the QR code a long time ago and where you are the product. That's what that was about. You may want to go track that down for yourself to see and verify for yourself the truth of what I've been telling you so many years ago. I don't even, so long ago, I don't even know. So what did I just say about that QR code rolling out to identify those that want food from the, some of the food banks tied to the USDA in America already? Is already in the works, already going on. It's all rolling together. How are these nations going to do this? The government plans a phased-out rollout, expecting full nationwide adoption by February 2026. Historically, CRP codes facilitated everyday interactions such as filing taxes, registering companies, school enrollments, and applying for passports. Be free to travel, folks. Additionally, a separate program aimed at systematically collecting biometric data for minors is slated to commence within 120 days. Just like Illinois adding mental health and behavioral data for the compliant digital citizen in the global Siberian gulag. There are no borders, actually, in the digital realm. Figure that one out. As we fight and Trump makes a big highlight and everyone cheerleads about keeping border control. And they're being, they have become agreeable to the non-border control in the digital realm. Well, because The Matrix is not a movie, I suppose. And people just ain't seeing it. Some people are. When I say ain't, none, but you know, it's, there's a few. We saw that the great Kobe swim. About 17% actually understood not to do much with it. Don't even engage it. The rest of the world fell. And that's the problem. In this case, you start seeing it's tied to the government services benefits, anything you're going to do. People haven't figured out what taxes are. Besides, I keep telling you, it's extortion underneath the law, equally applied, Title 42, 19, Section 1981 in the U.S. Code. But beyond that, how is it? How do you escape that? Is it possible to escape that? What do you have to not be doing in order to escape that? And since there's more, many, maybe if not all, people that haven't, you're going to eventually be tied up into this. Unless you die first. And they'll help you there too. So this noose of what is behaviorally acceptable to associate with who begins to corral the livestock. EU age verification app to ban Android apps not licensed by Google. The EU is more reportedly planning to add an Android app integrity check into its age verification app. This would mandate the user to only use, the apps licensed and installed from Google Play. Talk about a monopoly here. Comply or die. How long ago did I start saying that? Even before I was broadcasting. How's that? It uses Google Play's integrity service to identify and verify the app's authenticity. So again, notice all the mandates going down here. We're primed for it with the Kobe swimmer. Even though they're unlawful, now the word's in our psyche. And it's just the new normal. After releasing the blueprint of its age verification app, the EU is now planning to integrate the Android age authentication check into the system. And this is about incrementalism as well. These tabs, as I said last episode, would be coming, how they would attach the mental health, how they would incrementally grab more and more and more things from you. And to this week, we hear again, not just this week, but I said it before, they monetize you. You are the product. And you heard that right coming out of the gate in this broadcast, right in the news. As for a Reddit forum, the EU is developing a white label app to perform verifications of the app's integrity. This has been being done to make sure the app's being used for the age verification service is genuine. Now, since the new system of the EU's age verification relies on Google Play integrity for the Android app verification, the app must be licensed by Google, which they get money for these licenses. Pretty fascinating. Monopoly that's going on here, and no one says much about it. And partly is because you keep using them. They removed Don't Be Evil. You didn't say, okay, then I'm not participating with you as much as possible. When I'm talking about de-Googling your phone, what am I saying here? You're not going to be able to get the licensed app. And what's interesting is if you looked around, there's already people breaking this thing down, figuring out how to break it down, and not just this, but other age verification protocols. So keep your ear to the rail and find what you need here. But anyway, they're making it mandated, and then you're dealing with these authorized verification systems that are monopolized by private enterprise, private corporations, who could care less about you, but their profit. It should be downloaded from the Play Store, and most importantly, all the device security checks must be cleared. So you are not free to move about the country, and you are not free to associate with just anyone. The Android App Integrity Check, which is part of the EU's age verification system, is still under planning. If there's no changes in the final version, it is going to restrict the users from installing third-party apps. Verified and authenticated for your safety, I'm sure. By blockchaining you to the Digital Panopticon Ecosystem Infrastructure, SEC, back in the United States, debuts Project Crypto to bring U.S. financial markets on-chain. The Securities and Exchange Commission on Thursday debuted Project Crypto, an initiative to modernize securities regulations to allow for crypto-based trading. The announcement comes amid a surge, like a disease, a surge of interest in tokenization. See how they got that? You put in the interest and they decided to go ahead and start regulating the heck out of it. A surge, like a disease, a contagion in tokenization, token citizenship. The process of issuing digital representations of a blockchain of publicly traded securities and other assets. SEC Chair Paul Atkins discussed the importance of preventing crypto companies from being driven offshore by, quote, one-size-fits-all rules, close quote. To achieve President Trump's vision of making America the crypto capital of the world, the SEC must holistically consider the potential benefits and risks of moving our markets from an off-chain environment to an on-chain one. SEC Chair Paul Atkins said in remarks to an American leadership in the Digital Finance Revolution Conference Thursday afternoon, referring to blockchain technology that enables cryptocurrencies, but also other applications as well. Remember, you heard out of Mexico, integrates, these programs integrate with each other eventually, towards the incremental creepiness that goes on. Mission creep. But you see right here, making everything on-chain embraces the outlaw. No one off the chain, dog. I've talked about this embrace the outlaw in the mining law. Because at the time before the mining law, the miners were at war with the American government. And someone got the sharp and smart idea, no, the intelligent idea. Well, let's go ahead and let's embrace what they want. Let's regulate it. And then we can control what's going on, and we can remove our need to go to war with them. And that's what happened. And as I reported a couple of episodes ago, what's going to happen, and don't underestimate the dangers here, where private equity is involved. Because I hope you got the link to Tiffany Ciancy's explanation of the coming sleight-of-hand plunder Trump is allowing upon these retirement accounts. It's now official. Trump opens up 401k plans to crypto. See, please tie all this integration together of what's going on, and then we bring in the, real quickly, the potential likelihood, I said, would say, plunder of these things, despite all their regulation. That's what legalisms are. That's what legal loopholes are. Well, it's supposed to be keep you safe and protected, but we found a loophole. Executive order embraces alternative assets in retirement savings. President Trump has made a notable move regarding how people might save for retirement. Trump signed an executive order designed to make it easier for Americans to invest their 401k retirement savings in alternative assets such as cryptocurrencies, private equity, and real estate, reports The Guardian. And I want to go back just for those of you who scrutinize the tax code. You tell me if American is even listed in there. the American taxpayer. You tell me if American is listed in there, or whether these nuisances aren't talking to much of anything but your heart and your mind. And they're not talking about the law whatsoever, and that confuses the statuses. But moving back here, I want to highlight this word right in the list, right in the middle, private equity. Because this is what the problem was that Tiffany Cianci was talking about right here. And you see it's all integrated right there. The move opens up $12 trillion retirement market to asset classes beyond traditional stocks and bonds. The New York Times notes the current rules do not explicitly prohibit such investments, but the Labor Department, which oversees retirement plans, warns against them. The order from Trump, whose administration and family business have embraced the crypto industry, directs the department to reevaluate its guidelines and rules. It's a significant shift from the Biden administration, the story notes. Supporters say that the move could offer savers. I have to stop there. Offer savers a wide range of investment opportunities. And potentially higher returns, especially for younger workers willing to take on more risk. Critics, however, warn that bringing more speculative assets like crypto into retirement accounts could jeopardize long-term financial security. Cryptocurrencies in particular are notorious for their volatility and exposure to fraud. And when you hear Tiffany Cianci's explanation of how the deception works, fraud isn't going to be the half of it. Or the worst part, when the private equity comes in. So those of you that with this or know someone with this really need to figure out what's going on with this. I would not touch this with a 10-foot pole at all. I mean, they talk about cryptocurrency in this article. They're not talking about the private equity investment that they might be able to commingle. And listen to Tiffany explain what's going to happen. You will not be aware that your accounts have been plundered. So, word to the wise. The nuisance is on here telling us. Trump did what she said he were doing, what the private equity was trying to get the government to do for a long time. The lobbying that was going on about this didn't make this law yesterday. This has been going on, like all these things going on underneath the skin of all of this, that even what I talk about. This is crypto stuff is recent, new, but it was adjusting itself to, as I told you, to be something, even though the government was saying it wasn't. UK details its bank account surveillance power. So here we have, again, the incremental integration of all these things around the world. And I just showed you that nation states, we're talking states, we're talking nations, they're talking nation states, the states, the nations we live in, integrating their databases. So what? Intelligence, their intelligence facilities and the military can get it. Bank accounts could soon become open ledgers for the state, with Social Security claimants first in line for scrutiny. You understand they're going after the elderly, right? Plans to give the UK Departments for Work and Pensions new authority to probe people's bank accounts are moving closer to reality, with Parliament expecting to pass measures later this year. Can I interject the other story out of Ukraine, that they liked their borscht and porridge, and heck, they didn't need pensions because they had a roof over their head, as meager as it was. Civil liberties groups say the proposals open the door to financial surveillance on a scale never before seen in the UK. Under Labour's fraud, error, and debt bill, the DWP would be able to compel banks and building societies to share information about Social Security claimants. Baroness Maeve Sherlock told the House of Lords that the so-called eligibility verification measure will require institutions to provide specific account details once a formal request is issued. This includes the account holder's name, date of birth, sort code. Is that your product code? Account number? And a certain indicators of what the account fits the rules for receiving Social Security. Officials say the information will be used to check if someone qualifies for the payments they receive, pointing to the £16,000 or $21,000 savings threshold that normally rules out eligibility for universal credit. The department intends to introduce the process in stages over a year, starting with a smaller group of financial providers, third parties. The legislation also hands the DWP a second power, the ability to issue direct deduction orders to remove money directly from wages or bank accounts. Programmable currency may be here as well. Similar powers already exist for HMRC and the Child Maintenance Service, and the DWP expects to use them thousands of times a year. Privacy advocates, including Big Brother Watch, say the policy is intrusive and threatens to usher in an unprecedented system of mass financial surveillance. Again, global, just as they're doing in Russia already. Underneath what? Sustainability, sustainable development. So let's keep all that in together today. This is what's going on. This is probably why. When I say sustainable development, I think the UN. No, this is a system of economic plunder globally. The UN is just this front cover for that situation. And in fact, the report just came out and said hardly anybody's reading those UN reports anyway. So I felt pretty privileged. I'm one of the ones that do read some of those reports. A lot less anymore, but I did. And so and they count on that. I think that was an update on how well they're doing to hide the information right in plain sight. And some people that weren't big spectators but also didn't mentally and correctly assess the safety risks before diving in this case, the extreme deep end. I reported on this a couple years ago, and we have got the final Titan report. Failed adhesive joints likely led to the submersible disaster. 5 deaths aboard Ocean Gate's Titan were preventable, says the Coast Guard. The Coast Guard has wrapped up a 2-year investigation into the deadly explosion of the Titan Ocean submersible in 2023. And one salient point stands out. Quote, "This marine casualty and the loss of 5 lives was preventable," says Jason Neubauer, chairman of the Coast Guard Marine Board and Investigation. The report detailed the problems with Titan owner OceanGate, finding the company had critically flawed safety procedures. Had he lived, OceanGate Chief Executive Stockton Rush, who was on the doomed submersible, would likely have faced charges of criminal negligence. The initiating event in the fatal explosion, they call it, explosion, was the loss of a structural integrity of the Titan pressure vessel. Specifically, it said an adhesive joint on the hull appears to have failed. And before I go too far, because I'll just lose that, this is a pressure vessel, but it's because it's being crushed at the bottom of the ocean. And what happens is not an explosion. This was the problem I mentioned when I talked about this. It's an implosion. We went through a lot. I went through a lot of the structural stuff. I went through the idea that their little strain gauge probably wouldn't help save this. And we're seeing that it was a seal seam. What I'm interested in when I see this, the implosion, the crushing of this vessel because the air gets compressed and the bodies and everything to their extent of response get crushed and smashed down, was if this was just a seam on the end, how did the tube turn into fragments? Because I don't remember seeing a whole lot of that. Anyway, just a thought. So they're saying an adhesive joint on the hull appears to have failed. The Coast Guard says OceanGate leveraged intimidation tactics, allowances for scientific operation, and the company's favorable reputation to evade regulatory scrutiny. By strategically creating and exploiting regulatory confusion and oversight challenges, OceanGate was ultimately able to operate Titan completely outside of established deep sea protocols. So let's just apply that little phrase right there onto what I've just been talking about with this, what's coming down through this crypto technical infrastructure that's going on, and the integration of everything. And there's third parties that are already inside those rules, and inside the management, and inside the monopoly of who is authorized. Going forward, there is a need for stronger oversight and clear options for operators who are exploring new concepts outside of the existing regulatory framework. And so pretty close to, not specifically what I said, but pretty close to what I was saying. And they didn't have a moment to know. It just blew. It just went in an instant. I don't even know if they even had a thought about that thing compressing. But yeah, there was a whole lot going on that we read that could have been avoided. They didn't. And I was taking this on more of why would you go down in a vessel like that? You know, we got to take responsibility for ourselves. If you look at the history, I'm not sure if it was that vessel. They had the outer container. They had one where they had a crack, and it was like 4 feet long. That should have never went back in the ocean, but they did. They said they fixed it and they brought it back in the ocean. I don't know if that was the hull that they used. I doubt it because it was a seam, they say, adhesive, a glue. Why would you do that too? So there was a lot going on in this, and it's a shame because the exploration, the science behind it, the environment that you're in, again, wanting to be into oceanography, this was keen to what my interests had been in the past. So it's a sad thing. Yeah, but again, we maybe shouldn't have got in that vessel before we understood what we were getting into. For those people that went in, well, RIP, rest in peace, or pieces. Oop, bad joke, I guess. Anyway. And other interesting things in the deep and maybe the high altitude, Krasnikov volcano erupts on Russia's Kamchatka Peninsula for the first time in 600 years. 600 years. Another very cool thing. The Krasnikov volcano on Russia's Kamchatka Peninsula has erupted for the first time in 600 years. The head of Kamchatka's volcanic eruption response team, Olga Garina, announced earlier. The Russian Emergencies Ministry regionally branch for the Kamchatka Krai, using KVRT data, reported on ash emission from Krasnikov volcano, which occurred to a height of 6 kilometers, while the height of the fire-breathing mountain itself is 1,856 meters above sea level. This is the first historic eruption in 600 years. Pretty cool. The last eruption reportedly took place, I think they were saying, about 1463. Quote, at the present, a crack is observed on the slope and a lava dome is forming, which is accompanied by a powerful steam and gas activity. At the same time, a powerful ash column is standing over the northern crater of the volcano. The ash plume is stretching to the east of the volcano, she added. According to the scientists, the eruption of the Krasnikov volcano was possibly connected to a recent strong earthquake with a magnitude 8.8. In late July, a magnitude 8.8 earthquake occurred in Kamchatka, the strongest since 1952. And since then, in this report, There's a zipper going on. About 6 more volcanoes started up as well. And it seems, as I've told you a long time ago, I had an earthquake theory that stopped when the Banda Aceh earthquake happened. And I noticed this time, almost missed it, because I'd stopped looking at it, because the theory went away. It almost appears that it may have been partially restored. So I'm going to have to wait for some subsequent large earthquakes to prove this out, to what extent. But there's an interesting dynamic that goes on. And it may just have, this may have been a big enough movement that it released whatever the tensions were that stopped back in the Banda Aceh quake. So pretty interesting things. And I want to remind us of there's volcanoes going off, and the Rainier one has been going off. It's been dormant, so-called dormant. They call it dormant. I don't think they're dormant. As long as they're over a whole space that goes to the mantle, they're going to go off. In fact, why Hawaii is where it has volcanoes is because there's a hole that the earth has been moving over that hole, and it just keeps blowing out. And right now it happens to be where Hawaii is. And that's partly what's going on. But very cool. Very neat stuff. Rainier is shaking like crazy. There's a lot of interesting things. I don't touch a lot of that information. To me, it's just the marvel of nature, and we can watch that and be interested as we will. What our problem is that we have men and women who want to attack us and harm us, and we've got to be aware of that. The two-legged animals are seemingly much more dangerous than anything out that Mother Nature has, if we're paying attention, even though she is not, Mother Nature's not very, not very comforting sometimes, so we'll keep moving on. And whether or not the 500-year volcano awakening had any part of it, the Siberian Gulag is ultimately not safe and effective. Russians should get ready for more internet blackouts and switch to cash, lawmaker says. And so listen to all the duality that's going on with this fantastic, fantabulous, beautiful, terrific technology, but let's get real. Don't push ourselves beyond what our into risks that we shouldn't really be taking. And we're getting a nation that is actually integrating the interwebs, the internet infrastructure, the digital ecosystem, is still warning. Switch to cash. Have it available. A senior Russian lawmaker is urging citizens to adjust to the growing likelihood of widespread internet disruptions by relying more on cash and preparing to reduce access to digital services. Vladimir Kutenev, head of the State Duma Industries and Trade Committee, told the pro-Kremlin news outlet Life that Russians should be ready for regular and necessary internet shutdowns and recommended withdrawing cash in advance to avoid being caught off guard. Restricting or shutting down the internet is a necessary measure, Kutenev said. There are critical infrastructure facilities whose failure could have serious consequences. He's acknowledged the country's reliance on digital payment systems, but emphasized the need to prioritize national security over convenience. We're used to paying with cards or smartphones and having constant connectivity, but now it's important to accept temporary restrictions as a necessity. So tie those together, necessities and national interest. What do we hear over there in Mexico? Oh, the National Guard, the military gets involved as well. Cross border. Again, there is no actual border in the interwebs. Don't turn into a hipster who only lives in the center of Moscow yet. Life is not limited to comfort. His comments follow sharp rise in internet outages across Russia due to the threat of Ukrainian drone attacks in recent months. Russia authorities say that the temporary mobile internet shutdowns helped prevent drones from receiving targeted coordinates via civilian networks. According to the independent communications watchdog Novosti, disruptions were reported in 77 regions from mid-July, including remote areas far from the front lines like Primorye and Sakhalin and Kamchatka regions. Mobile internet was shut down in 62 regions simultaneously on Monday. While officials frame the outages as security measures, they have caused growing frustration among residents and business owners who depend on mobile networks for payment processing, communication, and navigation. You believe that? But here's a note, word to the wise. Sounds like good advice to me, this guy's telling us from Russia. Don't trust the internet or any organization controlling the internet to keep you safe or surviving. But don't underestimate the prediction. There might be just as easily, Vince, easily in the United States due to some sort of confabulated cause or sheer stupidity. That's S-T-O-O-P-I-D-I-T-Y for my hearing sensitive. The warnings are out for us, folks. We really need to make the choices to stay away from this. And I will add for us in the United States, and it's coming through, although it's being adulterated too, more things we have to really pay attention. Cash is king. But we need to move into sound money. So move from the fiat into gold and silver coin. And I think if you think that through, you're going to see that all the stuff I've been talking about becomes irrelevant to them. And you just tell them, I can't. I just can't. Don't have the facilities. I'm not part of the infrastructure. And might this be a potentially earth-shaking event from Russia? As we read, Russia is bringing missiles back. And this time it's personal. With the U.S. deploying intermediate-range systems in Europe and Asia, Russia says it's done waiting and begins reshaping its own arsenal. On August 4th, the Russian Foreign Ministry announced that Moscow was abandoning its unilateral moratorium on the deployment of ground-based intermediate and short-range missiles, the INF class. The decision comes amid what Russian officials described as an ongoing expansion of U.S. missile systems in Europe and Indo-Pacific, including weapons once banned under the now defunct INF Treaty. Let's kind of roll that out. U.S. missile systems with the peacemaker Trump? Really? You don't say. The U.S. has begun placing such systems in key regions on a potentially permanent basis, undermining strategic stability and creating a direct threat to Russia's national security. So this is on the peace faker's watch, remember, as he claims Putin is bullsteining him. Moscow is preparing military technical countermeasures in response, as is now lifting all political constraints on the development and deployment of such systems. Moscow had shown restraint for several years after the U.S. withdrew from the INF Treaty in 2019. Although legally freed from its obligations under the accord, Russia opted for a self-imposed moratorium, vowing not to deploy ground-based intermediate-range missiles unless similar U.S. systems appeared near its borders. That condition, the mission statement asserts, no longer applies. Quote, since 2023, we have observed instances of U.S. systems capable of ground-launched INF strikes being transferred to the European NATO countries for trial use during exercises that clearly have an anti-Russian slant. Russia views these developments as destabilizing missile buildups that threaten its national security at the strategic level. The foreign ministry stated that Moscow will now undertake military technical response measures with the precise configuration to be determined by the Russian leadership based on interagency analysis and the evolving strategic environment. With the self-imposed moratorium now lifted, Russia is expected to move rapidly toward expanding its inventory of ground-based intermediate and short-range missile systems. The focus, according to Russian defense experts, will not only be on production, but on doctrinal adaptation and forward deployment. One of the central components of Russia's future arsenal is the Oreshnik system. The lifting of Russia's moratorium revives a security dilemma once thought relegated to the Cold War history: the deployment of nuclear-capable intermediate missiles on the European continent. U.S. allies are not merely accepting new deployments. Some are actively seeking them. Alongside U.S. systems, European initiatives such as the ELSA program and missile developments in South Korea and Japan are reshaping regional balances. There is no longer just a bilateral arms race, Stefanovich notes. We are witnessing a multinational acceleration, with several countries now embracing systems that were once considered too destabilizing. The global trajectory is clear, Stefanovich concludes. Deterrence is back, and it's being redefined. So the peacemaker Trump isn't going to allow me to remove nuclear-glowing postulated cricketism from my intro, is he? Now let's hope that these recent tremors bring a lasting peace. There's a shifting going on and a shaking. Things, at least Trump's liking it at this point. But listen carefully, really not what's being said, as well as what's being said. Trump says great progress made in Putin-Witkoff talks on Ukraine. Earlier in the day, Putin held a meeting with Witkoff in the Kremlin. Kremlin aide Yuri Ushakov said that they discussed the Ukrainian crisis and prospects for the possible development of strategic cooperation between the United States and Russia. Development for prospects. Dialogue at the speed of diplomacy is what I've said before. Development for prospects. That's pretty inert, isn't it? So a couple of days after this last time Trump did this, he declared Putin was bullsteining him, when that really wasn't the truth social either. But he'll go to his wailing wall to remind the faithful how persecuted he is. During the meeting, Russia transmitted signals on the Ukrainian issue and received corresponding signals from the U.S. So we got signals, ladies and gentlemen. Home of the Braves and Bravettes, we got signals. Special Envoy Steve Witkoff just had a highly productive meeting with the Russian President Vladimir Putin. Great progress was made. Afterwards, I updated some of our European allies. Everyone agrees this war must come to a close, and we will work towards that in the days and weeks to come, Trump wrote on Truth Social. So he's got nothing but smoke signals to tell the faithful about. As President Donald, I'm going to stop the Ukraine war in 24 hours. Trump kicks the can of whoop-ass he opened while he was in a room by himself down the road of impotency. Right, Edna? And let this be a reminder, kids. Don't open a can of whoop-ass behind a woodshed when you are by yourself. The smoke signals were so effective, Trump shifts to a charm offensive to get up close and personal. Trump intends to meet Putin next week. U.S. President Donald Trump intends to hold a personal meeting with his Russian counterpart, Vladimir Putin, as early as next week, the New York Times reported on Wednesday, citing two sources familiar with the matter. Trump reportedly unveiled his plan during a phone call with a number of Western European leaders. The report comes just hours after Trump praised a meeting between Putin and his U.S. Special Envoy, Steve Witkoff, calling it very productive. According to the United States President, great progress was achieved during the nearly three-hour-long smoke signal exchange, and the sides agreed to work on ending the Ukraine conflict in the days and weeks to come. He did not reveal any details. It is reported by the all-important, those familiar with the matter, that the signal smoke exchange went something like, you want peace? Da, we want peace. And confirmed in the report, Moscow has repeatedly said it is open to peace deal, provided the realities on the ground are taken into account and the root causes of the Ukraine conflict are resolved during peace talks. The same exact offer Putin made last time that Trump took offense to, saying Putin was bullsteining him. I guess it takes a lot for the truth to get through the Mar-a-Lago Mahler's tough leathered skin and into his nicked ear, especially with all that smoke in his eyes. I wonder if those unprecedented numbers of mutual irritants also reported can be cleared out before the two presidents can meet. And after the Putin-Witkoff smoke signaling, wherein sources close to the matter confirm the smoke signals communicated, you want peace? Da, we want peace. Russia and U.S. agree to hold Putin-Trump meeting in coming days, says a Putin aide. I might sound a little bit dismissive here, and I'm feeling like I am sounding a lot dismissive. This is important. But watch how Trump has played this over and over, and we come to the same point. And Putin's never said anything different. But Trump comes away with some emotional different change and difference about how it's not working anymore. And then he resorts to his peace faker mode. And we get back to the same point. Anyway, Russia and the U.S. have agreed to hold Putin-Trump meeting in coming days. Russia and the United States have agreed on meetings between President Vladimir Putin and Donald Trump in the coming days, with preparations for the summit now underway, according to Russian presidential aide Yuri Ashikov. And remember, we're talking about two nuclear powers. We're talking about the United States pressing intermediate missiles right up against Russia's border, and they're not having it no more. This is some serious stuff really going on here. And then we see the word summit. At the suggestion of the American side, an agreement has been reached in principle for a bilateral high-level meeting in the coming days, specifically a meeting between President Vladimir Putin and Donald Trump. Now, together with our American colleagues, we are beginning to work on the specifics. So that must have been quite a concession by Trump to have agreed on with these Russian issues that they've been repeatedly saying. And it was all denied. It's up until now, it was denied by Trump. Remember, they said that they wouldn't meet together unless there was something to decide. That's a very important point. So I'm going to be interested to see what really comes out of this. But we got some indication what it's all really about. The location for the meeting between Vladimir Putin and Donald Trump has been agreed upon, and the Kremlin will provide further details later. Next week is designed as a benchmark for Putin-Trump meeting, but it's difficult to say how many days preparation it will take. And it'll be the speed of diplomacy. But let's hope Trump isn't bullshitting Putin on this one to get a meeting that otherwise wasn't going to happen without a capitulation acknowledging what Russia insists are existential threats to its existence. And despite the other fact in minor detail, that the United States government seeks the destruction of Russia. But you didn't really hear a word about Ukraine in these articles here in this last article. It's not really talked about. They just say that it was referenced because of what Witkoff did. And Putin just came out to say there was no conditions created yet for meeting with Zelensky, the illegitimate president, that's going to somehow have to work it out with Russia as well after this meeting. So there's no Ukraine deal here, really. So what's on the agenda? I suppose it'll be a bit of Ukraine for sure, but we read in the next article, upcoming Putin-Trump meeting to help continue Russia-U.S. dialogue. Oh, it's the dialogue this whole thing is about. There we go. Still unpacking the damage done by the Biden regime at the speed of diplomacy, just as I reported months ago would be the case. But Trump is too impatient for this, especially when he wants to get out of a game where he holds no cards, but wants to save face and bluff as if he does hold those cards, being that the United States, that he's the commander-in-chief of, is the arsonist to the fire. He fanned the flames to continue when he was in Trump 1. And Donald I Know Nothing Trump was not too happy with Putin the last time he dialogued with Putin on these points and what Putin told him. So I guess he figured maybe getting rid of the phone and the smoke signals will help. The meeting between Russian President Vladimir Putin and U.S. President Donald Trump will help to continue dialogue between Russia and the United States more actively. The head of the Russian Direct Investment Fund and Russia Specialist Presidential Envoy for Economic Cooperation with Foreign Countries, Kirill Dmitriev, said. Of course, the summit between the leadership of Russia and the United States, which is scheduled for next week, may become an important historical event, an event when Russia's position will be clearly conveyed before President Trump, Dmitriev told reporters, adding that this dialogue will continue even more actively, including in the economic area. It's an economic summit. Well, with the country Trump continues tens of thousands of ineffectual economic sanctions against, that's not lunacy or nothing. But what skin is it off of Putin's nose to entertain a nuclear-armed egomaniac? Moscow and Washington will hold very important dialogue in various areas, Dmitriev said. Dialogue to consensus, I suppose. How SMART? Well, we note that there is a very important dialogue with the United States in various areas. Many opponents of Russia are trying to disrupt this dialogue, trying to prevent it, trying to misinform the U.S. leadership about various facts, Dmitriev said. So Trump is misinformed on top of it all. Earlier in the day, Russia and the U.S. agreed on a meeting between Putin and Trump in the upcoming days. Kremlin aide Yushchikov stated that preparations in the meeting have begun, consistent with the other two stories. So dialogue, I guess, better than a nuclear glow, right? Repairing the communication lines is important and noble. So good on Trump for that much, and that he's offered here enough to continue to engage, even if only dialogue, while he's making waves with the nuclear submarines. And the late breaking news on this, but they keep repeating they're going to have a scheduled meeting, is that has been scheduled. It's going to be August 15th, and it's going to be in the great state of Alaska, which I found fascinating. And so given it all worked out, that will reflect very well on Putin as well, coming to Alaska. Russia being what the West has been promoting and campaigning and characterizing Putin and Russia as a pariah state. If my listener can believe that when Putin comes to America to do this, it makes him look good in the eyes of the international countries. And Trump allowed that. Trump did that. So that little point right there raised my interest in this, maybe even beyond the dialogue. there may have been some real big concessions made, and there may be something. So this would all bode well for some sort of peace treaty as well in the near future, given that they don't have these two political heads of state don't have the power with Ukraine, but they can work toward that. Then they can persuade the Ukraine to agree if they will. But no, I don't think that Trump is a peacemaker in this, being he's the commander in chief of the nation that conducted a coup on Ukraine to cause this existential threat to Russia. And I don't think starting a war and then stopping the war the United States started is worthy of a special prize, as he's been now nominated more and more by countries because Trump is the peacemaker. I don't think so. Not when you're looking at what the geopolitics is about. But beyond that, there's another potential problem. Trump is promoting that the meeting is about Russia, but the Newstis tells us the meeting is for another purpose. So all this theater may likely be to evade the obligation to get to the bottom of where the Epstein files or other outstanding files may lead, such as exposing compromised officials and the method of that compromise, if the uniparty government weren't of the conflicted class. That comes up in the news as well, that Trump doesn't like. Interesting how it goes through, the hypocrisy that goes on and on in this. This is BTW RLM 640. And you can't go wrong when you get behind a woodshed. That is for sure. Trump, it seems, also went cuckoo after Biden. As we read from The Guardian, as I was talking, I'm wondering, concerned about Trump's health. Aside the politics, the man, we're seeing signs, folks. And this week, the discussion's starting to come up. Again, can't almost get it out of my mouth, and it starts to come around. And that's good. That's a good thing. That means that we're not, it used to be months and months and years, and now people are coming right onto it, which is good. Now, the next thing, we're going to transition this knowledge, and we're going to have to start taking action. But this is an interesting one. Following what I was talking about last episode, Trump's strange public appearance call into question his mental abilities. Adam Gabbat, a columnist for the British The Guardian, writes about this, comparing the behavior of the current U.S. president with his predecessor, Joe Biden. So during a recent meeting with the president of the European Commission, Ursula von der Leyen, Trump abruptly switched from discussing immigration to the following. One more thing I say to Europe, we will not allow the construction of a windmill in the United States. They're killing us. They are destroying the beauty of our landscapes. Then Trump talked nonstop and without any prompting for 2 minutes about windmills, claiming that they scare whales and wind energy kills birds. For more than a year, 79-year-old Trump has been demonstrating strange behavior at election events and interviews, in his spontaneous statements, and at press conference. The president constantly deviates from the topic, including at a cabinet meeting this month where he talked for 15 minutes about decorating and does not seem to remember simple facts about his government and his life, the journalist writes. Now, let me interject there. It's been interesting to me. Melania is usually the first lady normally doing all that decoration, isn't she? Not to be seen. He's taking that up, though. He gives examples of how this month the president mistakenly claimed that his uncle was a teacher of a terrorist nicknamed Unabomber at a recent cabinet meeting. He talked about 13 minutes. How he decorated the meeting room, did not mention the contribution of allies to the humanitarian aid to Gaza, swayed to music on stage for 40 minutes, and in general in his speeches, constantly moving from one topic to another. Quote, Trump is distracted without thinking. He just switches topics without controlling himself and without having a coherent narrative, says Harry Siegel, senior lecturer in the Department of Psychology and Cornell University at the Department of Psychiatry at Weill Cornell Medical Center. Siegel said that another characteristic feature of Trump's dubious sharpness of mind is confabulation. It's when he takes an idea or something that has already happened and adds something to it that hasn't yet happened. During his presidency, Joe Biden was subjected to active criticism about the sharpness of his mind, including from Trump, recalls a British newspaper. After Biden's disastrous performance at the debate in June 2024, when he repeatedly lost the thread of discussion, a thorough check of physical abilities eventually led to the fact that he did not run for re-election. It is noted that Trump did not undergo medical checks and evaded questions about his mental abilities, calling himself a stable genius. In April, Trump's attending physician, Sean Barbabella, wrote that the president demonstrates excellent cognitive and physical health and is fully prepared to fully fulfill the duties of commander-in-chief and head of state. He said that Trump had an assessment of cognitive function, which turned out to be normal. This report did not prevent us from doubting the sharpness of Trump's mind, although the White House also strongly rejects the issue of Trump's mental health. Democrats have begun to question the president's fitness more aggressively. We are seeing the classic signs of dementia, which is a sharp deterioration in the initial state and functions of a person. John Gartner, a psychologist and writer who has worked for 28 years as an assistant professor of psychiatry at the Johns Hopkins University School of Medicine, said in June, if you look at the films of the 1980s, Trump was really extremely eloquent. He was still a jerk, but he could express his thoughts in complete paragraphs, and now it's really hard for him to finish a thought, and this is a serious deterioration. Gartner, who during Trump's first term co-founded the organization Duty to Warn, a group of mental health professionals who believe that Trump had malignant narcissistic personality disorder, warned, I predicted before the election that he would probably collapse before the end of his term. And judging by how quickly it deteriorates, you know, we'll see. But the fact is that it will only get worse. That's my prediction. So it's not just me taking notice of Trump's apparent cognitive decline here. Despite all his promotions, again, P.T. Barnum is a sucker board. You can believe that there's nothing going on. You can hope beyond hope that he's okay. But I'm, again, politics aside, don't like when I see people starting to decline. And another problem is if you start denying it, maybe you should be treating it as well. So we cannot disregard, as I was pointing out partly, relative to this confabulation and talking with Putin and then him coming away from a discussion and did not like that discussion, was disagreeable to it. And yet when you looked at what Putin said, there was nothing disagreeable in what Putin said. It was how Trump added things to what there was or disregarded things that were there. Did not know about certain aspects, which we see now repeatedly. And his lack of interest to go track down to be knowledgeable, which is his obligation and duty to do for his office. He has me really concerned. And now that confabulation, Trump is showing all the signs of dementia, is right here to be viewed. I don't understand how this wasn't an option to be looked at. And there was a lot of protection inside the White House. And why, I guess he's a force to be reckoned with, but at some point, they've got to be really careful on how this comes out. And we're not just talking here, the man, now if we're talking about that, get back to the politics. He is the president of a nuclear war power, a nuclear armed power, and he's got to make decisions. And when you see him, as I pointed out, the two sub, making waves with the two subs, that didn't seem rational to me. That's making stuff up. In fact, disregarding what was already going on. There's two problems in that one decision. Three problems when you figure out that that wasn't a hand to play at all. U.S. President Donald Trump has confabulation, which is the elderly and one of the most obvious early signs of dementia. This was stated in an article of The Hill by Chris Truax. Truax stipulates that this is not a diagnosis, but the facts speak for themselves. He noted that Trump, when it suits him, has always been ready to mislead people. But what he is doing now is something else. Confabulation is sometimes called an honest lie because a person sincerely believes what he says, even if it's obviously false. A person confabulates when he tells completely made-up stories that do not bring him much tangible benefit. In older people, confabulation is one of the most obvious early signs of dementia. The author writes, and I keep reading this confabulation. It's a new word. We don't use it much. Don't get lost in just this one word. He's got other signs as well. This one seems to come up in the Newstis. And I'm wanting to get past, this could be just the Democrats doing attack. No, this is something that you can just see, watch the guy do. It's pretty startling in some regard, actually, in just 6 or 8 months that's been coming down. So again, we can deny it, or we can start looking at what the facts and the truth are and start to get into a better mindset about what we might be watching, and to be possibly wary, because it's easy for someone to come in and tell him this is a good idea and he'll agree with it. And you're watching the Siberian Gulag being assembled underneath him, which is completely catastrophic. He was convinced to do the great Covey swindle. He didn't even have the lawful power and law to do it. But he did it. He said so. He made it up. So I'm looking at this a lot longer than just this last 6 months as well. Another early sign of dementia, he says, is a difficulty with mathematical calculations. As an example, Trump's habit of juggling unthinkable percentages is cited, in particular the promise to reduce drug prices by 1,000%, 600%, 500%, 1,500%. According to him, Trump's claim that the Jeffrey Epstein's case was falsified by ex-President Barack Obama and his FBI director James Comey is also complete nonsense, because by the time Epstein was arrested in 2019, quote, they had been missing for a long time. Also, Trump could not remember that he himself appointed Jerome Powell chairman of the Federal Reserve System. There is no doubt that the president, the person charged with making the most important decisions about life and death for both the country and the world, struggles with mathematical concepts as vivid memories that have no roots in reality and has increasingly vague idea of past events that really happened. This is not a medical diagnosis. These are facts that we can see for ourselves, and we all know, even those of us who voted for Trump 3 times, that this cannot be allowed to continue. The author writes, he notes that despite Joe Biden's dementia problems, his staff coped with them excellently and protected both Biden and the country, and Trump has no such protection. Can you imagine Pete Hegseth and Christine Noem coping with Trump's dementia, or even saying no to him and threatening to resign? Given the lack of independence in Trump cabinet, I'm not sure that the final decision is, but I know but the first step is for Trump's most loyal supporters to recognize, at least for themselves, that there is a problem, as Biden's supporters did for him. Donald Trump is showing all the signs of dementia. If it was a neighbor, a parent, or a family friend, you wouldn't have a problem seeing it. We should not turn away just because it's the president, Truax sums up. So what's the reality? You know, take your dose of reality on this, one way or the other. Take this report as you will, but there are signs, and they shouldn't be taken lightly, especially when it's affecting a let-them-eat-chaos bull in the China closet that's as big as the world. This is not a small problem. And totally different than what a Biden would have done and what does, and we can see that. And the problem with having only the intellect of an insect is you can be made a drone for someone else. Spy cockroaches and AI robots, Germany plots the future of warfare. Remember that report about the Dragonfly that was fitted with electronics, biological control packages? I guess they've expanded. Maybe the crickets are next. Gundobert Scherf, the co-founder of Germany's Helsing, Europe's most valuable defense startup, Russia's invasion of Ukraine changed everything. Scherf had to fight hard to attract investment after starting his company, which produces military strike drones and battlefield AI, 4 years ago. Now, that's the least of his problems. The Munich-based company more than doubled its valuation to $12 billion, Bravo dollars, at a fundraiser last month. Quote, Europe this year, for the first time in decades, is spending more on defense technology acquisition, opens new tab, than the U.S. Now, let me remind you, this is at the instance of the peace faker, Trump, and the installation, the request, of these intermediate ballistic missiles that Russia finds as an existential threat, sufficiently to start now placing nuclear missiles in the way of this as their defense. Not obligated anymore, even self-obligated. The former partner of McKinsey & Company says Europe may be on the cusp of transformation in defense innovation akin to the Manhattan Project, the scientific push that saw the U.S. rapidly develop nuclear weapons during World War II. Europe is now coming to terms with defense, they say. Sounds like it hasn't come to terms with the annihilation and nuclear winter to me. Helsing is part of a wave of German defense startups developing cutting-edge technology from tank-like AI robots and unmanned mini-submarines to battle-ready spy cockroaches. We want to help give Europe its spine back, Scherf said. That's the words of a lunatic, a two-legged lunatic. Some ideas under development feel akin to science fiction, like swarm biotactics cyborg cockroaches that are equipped with specialized miniature backpacks that enable real-time data collection via cameras, for example. The electrical stimuli should allow humans to control the insect's movements remotely. The aim is for them to provide surveillance information in hostile environments, for example, information about enemy positions, or biorobotics based on living insects, are equipped with neural stimulation sensors and secure communication modules, said Stefan Wilhelm. They can be steered individually or operate autonomously in swarms. Added bonus, I understand roaches survive nuclear radiation. But then who will operate them after the appearance of the green glass? So I remind you that story I did long ago about the dragonfly that was so fitted. And I told you before that, before they could put those packages, they have to modify the organism, whichever insect they're using. Maybe the human insect. They have to modify that so it will be receiving these packages. And I told you, watch what else may happen from the great Kobe swindle. And going back here a few tabs, speaking of rampaging monsters bigger than a raging bull in a china shop, Israel's Satan Yehu has decided on full occupation of Gaza. Satan Yehu's war cabinet set to approve military operations across the entire enclave, according to Israeli media. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Satan Yehu is set to announce plans to fully occupy the Gaza Strip. Satan Yehu's decision will see the Israeli military expand its operations across the entire enclave, including areas where Hamas captives are being held. The decision has been made, Amit Sega, chief political analyst of Channel 12, quoted an unnamed senior official in Satan Yehu's office saying, Hamas won't release more hostages without total surrender, and we won't surrender. If we don't act now, the hostages will starve to death, and Gaza will remain under Hamas control. Palestinian Ministry of Foreign Affairs condemned the reported plans and called on the international community to intervene urgently to prevent their implementation, whether they are a form of pressure, trial balloons to gauge international reaction, or genuinely serious, which we just haven't seen. Satan Yehu's office did not immediately respond to Al Jazeera's request for comment, and senior Hamas officials Osama Hamdan on Monday accused the United States and other Western countries of turning a blind eye to Israeli atrocities and said that Satan Yehu's government bore full responsibility for the lives of captives due to its stubbornness, arrogance, and evasion of reaching a ceasefire agreement and the escalation of the war of extermination and starvation against our people. 49 captives, including 27 who are believed to be dead, are still being held by Hamas, according to Israeli authorities. And Hamas knows that it comes to the same end if the hostages are released. So any incentive to release the hostages has been lost, absolutely. And it confirms the original intention of Satan Yehu to commit genocide if it means saving him from criminal prosecution, or both. And before their promotional photo shoot, Trump and the other woke Judeo-Christians in the GOP will pray for the illegal occupiers at the wall of the footing of the ruins of a destroyed fort of the fallen Holy Roman Empire. And I've never heard that Western Wall described anything else than a Roman fort. So I find it fascinating what people want to describe it as, what they see when they study the facts. as well as it was the Israeli archaeologists in 2011 were surprised to discover Roman coins under the foundation stones of the wall. Well, go figure, right? And if the footing wall of Fort Antonia isn't a wall of the Second Temple, but a separate fortress fortification set to protect the Second Temple, a place the final utter destruction of which, of the temple, that not one stone would be standing upon another. And therefore the Second Temple could not be the stacked stone wailing wall claimed to be of the temple. The Mandela effect in action, I suppose. It doesn't help to support the notion the Wailing Wall is actually the temple wall when, as described, quote, the Temple Mount area still remains the black hole of Jerusalem archaeology. Whatever the reason the hyphenated Christians pray there to a foreign power, it also makes sense then that these photo ops are not evidencing the notion of violating the separation of church and state, because these obligatory photo shoots are political, not religious. And politics and war go hand in hand, not peace. But all that aside, neither do we see any pictures of these compromised, hyphenated, woke GOP Christians showing them praying at the place believed to be where Christ, the Prince of Peace, was crucified, buried, and rose, which is 450 yards away at the Church of the Holy Sepulchre. Why is that? Who or what do these groveling U.S. sycophants actually worship? So in the very least, all this stops making sense as to what we are told to believe. What is beyond belief is the cannibal directive, the deed, indeed. You knows them when you sees them. Satan Ehu intends to sacrifice, destroy, devour the Israeli hostages in his continuing intention to genocide the Palestinians, because the ends justify the means. The Zionist Federation political movement will devour their own people who think that they are political Israelis, self-identifying as Jews, contrary to scripture as well, if it advances the political aspirations of the belligerent occupation of the foreign lands of Palestine in intention to genocide native Semitic and other Palestinians. And the people in the U.S. say they voted for this? Really? Satan Yehu deciding on full occupation of Palestine, murdering innocent people, including Christians, devouring children, is not defensible by any stretch of the imagination or any but a satanic, demonic style worship. Because non-hyphenated Christian-wise, thou shalt not murder, right? Palestinian calls secretly held in Microsoft Cloud. Comes your third-party digital infrastructure to help you to be dead. Israeli units 8200 allegedly holds millions of such calls on Azure servers. Microsoft Cloud technology is helping to facilitate an unprecedented Israeli surveillance system, according to a joint investigation by The Guardian. The report that in late 2021, Microsoft CEO Satya Nadella met with his head of Israel Unit 8200, the country's elite military intelligence arm, to discuss giving the unit access, quote, to a customized and segregated area within Microsoft Azure's cloud platform. Per the report, Nadella wasn't told what the storage was used for. Retaining and analyzing millions of phone calls from Palestinians each day, something the military's own servers couldn't handle from a storage or computing perspective. While Israel has long monitored Palestinian communications, the reach of the system, operational since 2024 and thought to involve data centers in the Netherlands and Ireland, is far broader and captures the conversations of much larger pool of ordinary citizens. And I found that statement shocking in a way, given Ireland's outward promotion and disagreement with the genocide of the Palestinians. Insiders say that the vast trove of data has helped inform airstrikes in Gaza, though it has allegedly originally developed with an eye toward the West Bank. Quote, when they need to arrest someone and there isn't a good enough reason to do so, that's where they find the excuse, one source said, referring to the information stored in Azure. Microsoft maintains that it's unaware of exactly what data Unit 8200 planned to store, claiming its work with the unit focused on bolstering Israel's cybersecurity. Quote, at no time during this engagement had Microsoft been aware of the surveillance of citizens or collection of their cell phone conversations using Microsoft services, a rep for the company said. And yet, we also don't hear them saying that they are cutting Unit 8200 off of any access, do we? So I hope you're putting all this together. I've been doing this for many months now. This digital infrastructure all working together. All have their plausible deniability that can be cut through quickly if anybody wanted to do so. Palantir's Gestapo on steroids, policing software taking over Germany. So what are we looking at here? Oh, we're talking about Germany. Yeah, we're talking about the United States too, right? We're talking about everywhere Palantir goes now. Palantir is inside your system, isn't it? Inside the United States system, isn't it? President Trump's allowing it. Palantir's Gestapo on steroids, policing software taking over Germany. Gotham, a surveillance program developed by Peter Thiel's CIA venture capital baby Palantir, is spreading like wildfire across police forces of German states, currently operating in three, with four more planning to adopt it. Gotham's capabilities? Instantaneous access to an unprecedented array of info about persons of interest flagged by police, from name, age, address, and criminal record to social media footprint. Can I stop right there and re-interject? That's what they're going to be helping use them. They're using to help them assess your mental health, okay? So that's going to be a part of it. And it's all powered by AI, Error Pronation. Local nonprofit Society for Civil Rights is up in arms over Gotham's spread. I had to chuckle about that because I've seen lots of places. Ukraine's another one. The public goes up in arms and they say, we're not going to do anything. Doesn't matter. Keep your arms up if you want. In fact, go to jail. You've surrendered. Anyone who files a complaint or is a victim of a crime or even just happens to be in the wrong place at the wrong time can attract police attention via this software, Franziska Gorlitz, a lawyer for the group, told local media. Society for Civil Rights has filed a formal constitutional complaint citing Gotham's, Batman coming to the rescue here, Gotham's breach of citizens' right to confidentiality of telecommunications and informational self-determination, but police aren't especially eager to give it up. And compact.de petition against the software has gotten almost 300,000 signatures. From links to Epstein to use as killware in Gaza and Ukraine to rigging European democracies and building a master database of every man, woman, and child in the U.S., Palantir has a much-deserved reputation as one of Silicon Valley's most notorious companies. In a United States government near you, right, Donald, make America Gestapo again, Trump? As Trump demands conflicted, Intel CEO resign. The call comes amid reports and allegations of Lip-Bu-Tan's ties to China. U.S. President Donald Trump has demanded the resignation of Intel CEO Lip-Bu Tan following reports of his ties to China. Tan took over the chipmaker in March as the company struggled to recover from falling sales. In a post on Truth Social on Thursday, Trump called Tan conflicted and said he must step down. Can I say that again? Trump called Tan conflicted and said he must step down. That's a good sentence. I think it needs to be universally applied as we go through the whole point of even talking about this. The CEO of Intel is highly conflicted and must resign immediately. There is no other solution to this problem, he wrote without elaborating. Well, great. But we shouldn't throw stones when living in a glass White House, as it were. Highly conflicted. No other solution. Resign. Sounds good to me, President Trumpenstein. How about we start with your administration, Congress, and all the other compromised by AIPAC and like operatives, foreign or domestic, within the gates, and then your billionaire big tech buddies. And the fiat system is conflicted too, as is the sustainable judicial branch, isn't it? You want to do something for the national security of the American people? You want to begin to make America great again? Start there. Start with the United States government. Resign the conflicted class. And if there's anyone left, let the DOJ investigate Lip Bouton and Intel if there's a national security problem or with the law. Stop interjecting yourself. Use lawful due process like the Constitution requires. You remember that piece of toilet paper, right, Donald Bush? Or can we expect the next thing the federal government and you infringers will be demanding the guy behind the woodshed resign because providing that all-important dose of reality is against the corrupted national interest and in conflict with your opinion? So when you're done with removing the conflicted class, get back to me. There's more than that threatening this country. Oh, wait. You'd be gone too and couldn't get back to me, wouldn't you, conflicted President Trumpenstein? Well, it is what it is. I mean, how else would you or could you justify genocide? So as you insist, and we the people accept your offer, all y'all resign, you conflicted hypocrites. Perfect. The more official confliction as proven in the great COVID swindle. FDA new drug approval AI is generating fake studies. The AI dubbed ELSA is supposed to be making employees better at their jobs. But remember the report I did oh so many episodes ago that explained that over 4,000 chemicals were put into an AI library, that the AI was to come up with new medicines, and out of that library of chemicals, it found one that may or may not have been safe, that it could be used, even though it advanced maybe 30 or 40, I can't remember the exact number. Keep that in mind. Or that supermarket that I reported on that used AI to create meal menus, most of which were not actually meals and not even used food, is kind of like that. That's what we're talking about here. Robert F. Kennedy Jr., Secretary of Health of Human Services, has made a big push to get agencies like the Food and Drug Administration to use generative artificial intelligence tools. In fact, Kennedy recently told Tucker Carlson that AI will soon be used to approve new drugs very, very quickly. But a new report from CNN confirms all our worst fears. ELSA, FDA's AI tool, is spitting out fake studies. CNN spoke with six current and former employees at the FDA, three of whom have used ELSA for work that they described as helpful, like creating meeting notes and summaries. But three of those FDA employees told CNN that ELSA just makes up non-existent studies, something commonly referred to in AI as hallucinating. The AI will also misrepresent research, according to these employees. Remember all the things I've been talking about these last number of episodes, all AI assisted from the government. Everything. Anything that you don't have time to double check is unreliable. It hallucinates confidently, one unnamed FDA employee told CNN. And that's the big problem with AI chatbots. They need to be double checked for accuracy, often creating even more work for the human behind the computer if they care about quality of their output at all. Exactly what I told you about the computer, the AI that used the 4,000 different chemicals to try and create medicines. You have to go back through and have people looking at it and then do the checks. It's not even just someone reading the list. People who insist the AI actually saves them time are often fooling themselves, with one recent study of programmers showing the tasks took 20% longer with AI, even among people who were convinced they were more efficient. So efficient, right, P.T. Barnabas? FDA Commissioner Marty Makary initially deployed ELSA across the agency on June 2nd, and an internal slide leaked to Gizmodo bragged that the system was cost-effective, only costing $12,000 in its first 4 weeks. Curry said that ELSA was ahead of schedule and under budget when he first announced the AI rollout, but it seems like you get what you pay for. If you don't care about the accuracy of your work, ELSA sounds like a great tool for allowing you to get slop out the door faster, generating garbage studies that could potentially have a real consequences for the public health of the United States. I would have to say again, they talk about the system, don't they? The people in the United States. Public health of the people in the United States. They always seem to forget y'all. CNN notes that if a FDA employee asks ELSA to generate a one-paragraph summary of a 20-page paper on a new drug, there's no simple way to know if the summary is accurate. And even if the summary is more or less accurate, what if there's something within the 20-page report that would be a big red flag to any human with expertise? The FDA employees who spoke with CNN said they tested ELSA by asking basic questions like how many drugs a certain class have been approved for children. ELSA confidently gave wrong answers, and while it apparently apologized when it was corrected, a robot being sorry doesn't really fix anything. We still don't know the workflow being deployed when Kennedy says AI will allow the FDA to approve new drugs, but he testified in June to a House subcommittee that it's already being used to increase the speed of drug approvals. What, like the increase to warp speed, as in the great Covey swindle, or faster? Kennedy also testified to Congress that he wants every American to be strapped with wearable health device within the next 4 years. As it happens, President Trump's pick for Surgeon General, Casey Means, owns a wearables company called Levels that monitors glucose levels in people who aren't diabetic. Oh, no conflict of interest there, right, Lip Bouton? But will harmful deepfake drug approvals be protected by the First Amendment? Judge strikes down California deepfake censorship law. It's become a censorship law, and there's no way that is going to survive, Judge Mendez said. California's attempt to regulate political speech on major social platforms has been blocked in federal court, and a judge ruling the state's latest deepfake law clashes with protections already established by Congress. Assembly Bill 2655 attempted to compel certain large platforms to track down and delete materially deceptive content about candidates, election officials, and office holders. Supporters described it as a safeguard against manipulated media. The companies targeted included X and Rumble, argued it was an attempt to turn them into agents of government censorship. And I find that laughable, as Rumble is the agent of censorship. Again, over 200 accounts for the Real Liberty Media Network gone by Rumble, without a warning, without an appeal, without a thing going on, as they push Wall Street speak. So this is a very interesting lawsuit that went on. What's good for the goose is not good for the gander, I suppose. Senior U.S. District Judge John Mendez sided with the platforms and did not even need to reach the argument of constitutional free speech questions to strike down the measure. He found the Federal Communications Decency Act already shields online services from punishment over third-party content. Well, you really need to be protected from those third-party monopolistic corporations in your healthcare, don't you? Well, they get, again, you don't get the protection. They do. And in this regard, probably rightfully so. No parts of this statute are severable because the whole statute is preempted, Mendez said in court. No parts of AB 2655 can be salvaged. I just wanted, for those of you that don't know, the severability clause has been added to lots, almost every legislation now. And what it says is what can be salvaged, where one part is illegal, the rest can go. This judge looks at the entire law and said there's no part of it that can be salvaged. So there's nothing that can be severed from it to make it valid. For Mendez, the law punished companies for doing something they are clearly protected by the CDA from doing. The court also cast doubt on another state law, Assembly Bill 2839, which prohibits false or misleading digital communications aimed at election workers, officials, voting equipment, or candidates in the months leading up to the election. That measure is also on hold, and Mendez signaled he doubts it will survive judicial review. Anybody can sue, he said. I can sue. If I see a video under this law, I can sue. He warned that such a rule chills protected speech and noted the state had not shown it was using the least speech restrictive approach possible. When the state suggested creators could avoid legal trouble by labeling their work as satire, Mendez rejected the idea as compelled speech. He's going to be risk averse, the judge said, of a creator. He's not going to do that. You're chilling the First Amendment rights. It's become a censorship law, and there's no way that is going to survive, Mendez also added. So, added to this, do we understand whether or not the federal government would take a ruling like that and make those error pronation approved drugs valid and free speech, notwithstanding how wrong they are? Is the danger that we're walking into that the government, and again, I'm shocked in a way, not shocked, but I'm shocked. I guess I'm shocked to always to find the proof coming out of their mouth. Last episode, I did the video. I don't do videos for audio that much, but I did that. I thought it was important for you to hear that Trump does not know a lot about a lot on these subject matters. And he's letting people around him make these decisions. And no one's doing the check. It's like this artificial organic intelligence is running that no one's double checking. And they're all running on how great the idea is. And no one's really checking for the consequences of what's really going on. And these laws that come through say, well, we can say anything really we want. And you start to attach that to the government, and then you attach that to national security. And I start to wonder really where the limit becomes. And then AI gets a hold of that. And remember the corruption that's going on, ongoing. Somebody actually, I can't remember now who it was, whether I even talked about it or whether I just read it. Someone captured the internet before AI started putting content out because it was going to be a commodity, that was untouched commodity that was going to be needed because AI was going to corrupt the body of work of what is said to be known by people. And so this is what starts to go on. And again, I've said it before myself. It's just a rule of thumb in computers and anything, actually, any endeavor, garbage in, garbage out. You've just heard it the last tab or so. This is what starts to happen with this AI. On the other hand, as I've also mentioned, the AI that's tasked to something that can work on definite things like physics and design of known things, again, with someone that will be looking at it and performing with it, it seems to work really, really well. And that's what I tell you about an AI created and fabricated jet engine. That's fascinating to me, but it's really a big math job, isn't it? A big math type of project. It's either the math is going to be right or it's not. And then your production is either going to be accurate or it's not. And the end result is that you can start up an engine and it works or it doesn't. You're not going to be in that case, and you know that it works. You can't take a bunch of chemicals, put them together, and expect it to be a medicine. And this is one thing that they tried, and they did do, I think, with the great Covey swindle. Trump did it. This is the thing I keep telling you. There's something wrong with this guy. He's even bigger than himself. He even makes that up. There's really no knowledge in him about that there's a restriction that is there to protect us, to keep us from going wrong or when things go wrong. And this is why I tell you to really look at the law. The law is not written really for when everything's going right. It's for what is the accountability such that you'll get it. What is the remedy that you've been suffered a harm? What's the remedy and how do you go about properly, lawfully, morally going after somebody for remedy? And our governments are now set up, not now in the context of how they've been adjusted, the governments are to be these inert, neutral places where people go in and use that facility to hash out the wrongs between them. Not the rights, the wrongs. And so this is what law, one regard, one analysis, law is when things go wrong, what is a purported neutral observer, witness, judge, how are they supposed to handle that conflict? And do what we call justice, which is really doesn't really have a good definition. It's really what the parties agree to generally. And again, these laws can offer a standard by which we would measure that. That's been developed over time. What's been happening lately in the last 40 years is the lobbying, corporate lobbying in particular, even now governmental lobbying, we saw print things like getting lawyers to come in and create the murder memo, extrajudicial execution, justifying things that are totally contrary to law within the government itself. You're watching the government degrade right there. And I've talked about all this. This is where we have to be careful. Also, the newer laws, you have to be very careful on whether or not they're lawful laws. As we see, even 50-year-old laws may not be lawful laws. And then that throws the whole law thing into a big question mark. What do we do then when things go wrong? When the government starts to use that as a license to steal, if you will, to manufacture, to claim things are safe, things are effective, things are efficient. It is nothing but a conflict. And to see, it's kind of precious, actually, to listen to Trump come out and say, jump into a private corporation's business. First of all. Secondly, say that his opinion is this person is conflicted without turning instead going to what he should do, the normal situation when things go wrong. Let's say crime happens. There's an order of things that you do. You don't just throw out that someone is wrong. That's a bed of defamation, isn't it? Don't you think? How is he immune from that? But he does. There's no censor in him about that. That's another problem with him. And it may be his, they call it dementia. It may be his cognitive abilities. He may be just that way. Doesn't make it right. Doesn't make him powerful. Doesn't make him better than just a bully and a brute. A false witness. He doesn't understand how to make it go right. We need these laws in a way because we're not right. People are not right. They're pretty screwed up. And the more I go through life, the more I see that. For as much as I was naive to most of that, my hardships right now are based in this misconception. As hard as it would have been, and still what is to see, it's there. And now what do you do? But if it wasn't for these laws that we see, that we give to courts, judges to decide, and we see they're corrupt, we're starting to see the totality of government is corrupt. We start to see the people, the workers inside. We still have problems amongst ourselves. Where do we go for the basis to decide that? It's, in my view, these laws that when you look at them, they make sense. They have an order about them. They allow a conclusion to be formed, and they give a remedy where it's deserved. Don't seem to be bad to go by. But having officials that are not constrained, like they weren't in the Covey swindle, though the law was there to constrain them, and no one resorted to it, you see the consequence, the irreparable harms that come from that, privately to each one of the people that are harmed, without remedy, and then you see it gives a license to those in government to take it further, to the point when someone, ma-ha-ha-ha, Kennedy, oh, we're going to have everybody wearing wearables. Oh, now we're going to go to AI. They're going to make medicines for us. No check and no balance. No one, no oversight. Already approved on a recent history of devastating effects on deception that was allowed. And nobody followed the law. And I've been told I may be the only one that saw that. It literally, the only one in the world. It's astonishing to me. When I pointing out early on about the communicable disease law, how that would have stopped everything, it would have certainly allowed for an obstructive basis to not harm people and a place for them to decide what everyone's clamoring for now. I was told I may be the only one in the world that observed that. I don't know why. Here's our problem. We all should have seen that. That extended to what we're seeing today. What the government's taking advantage of, exploiting in us, where we're watching Trump allow, whether he knows it or not, I told you they can bring this in, and Trump may not have, he doesn't have to know a thing about what he's allowing in that's bad. And you're watching it, if you'll be honest about looking at that. And you're watching the laws being shifted and changed to allow it. is what I want to remind you I've said before about the Second Amendment. I don't even think they'll touch it. What I'm telling you is nothing is for certain. Case law shows we have a fallen system. Precedent shows that. And it's the best they say we can do. And I say, well, if that's the best we can do, we better rely on the best of it in order to go forward to do this. Because what they're bringing on right now is going to be constrained. The Siberian Gulag is not a joke. You get forced into a system. We go to Russia. They said, don't rely on that system. Though you're in it, don't rely on it. Now, I think that's good advice. We have one more step back we can go. We can go to sound money that pulls it even out of the fiat and move it one more aspect into the asset side. And then we'll really watch the vampire squid come after us. But at least we know that it's there. There's not going to be subterfuge and deception when that happens, like there is in this digital infrastructure they're building up around us. Giving carte blanche license to monetize your life, like I told you, the UPC, the QR code would be used to identify you as the product universally, globally. Do you understand that? It's right here in these last weeks, certainly this episode, how it's all coming down, how they're doing it, and we sit quiet about it. As I said, though, we have the consent of the governed. You're watching the word mandate, compel, come out now, that you still have a say in the fact that you don't participate. You look at the infrastructure, and you don't make sure you have none of it. You say you have none of it. You can't participate that way. You need the option. You can't be forced to associate. And because they are, you're not going to agree. Start learning your basic laws, the black and white. This thing is going wrong. It's all we have now is the printed word. And you're watching that be corrupted. And so it's why I did this when I started to find out how to address the system. And these laws, there's certain laws you can embrace and there's certain you got to be careful of. But you're a lot better when they come with the cloak of authority and they use the black and white. You better know that black and white to protect yourself. And it's there to do. And my thought has been, and I've told you this before, the more that more people understand this, the more we'll be able to protect each other. Again, you say, here, we need some support. You'll be able to lend it. You'll lend it in the proper way. It just won't be screaming and yelling. You'll be able to know what to say. If someone else doesn't understand, you can feed them the information quickly. Like I was doing with the Great Covey Swindle. You need to challenge the local health official. And until the businesses go to the local health official on you, about their determination on you, they don't have an authority either. And within that local communicable disease law, there was many steps of due process that would protect you. And if that wasn't good enough, then you did have the habeas corpus, which I found many people, most everybody doesn't understand, even though it's written right in the black and white. When things go bad, what do? You go to the black and white. It was written in the black and white what the habeas was and how to make it work. When things went bad, and not hardly anybody resorted to it. And so I'm looking today, watching this judge strike down the censorship law. You know, in an odd way, if the government wants to rely on that, this is going to be very difficult for us going into the future, where freedom of speech given to AI is the ability to make bad medicine, and they get to get by with that. And we got to see how much harm they still accept in the Great Covey Swindle, that they don't pull these mRNA-type technologies out. Understand the level of harm that they're allowing now, where before it used to be one or two deaths in a vaccine that they thought was an actual vaccine. Now you can have millions of deaths, hundreds of millions of irreparable harms going on, and they still won't pull it. So please, put this stuff together. I bring through the tabs every week. It's not just a tab. It's just not the news. Tab after tab, pulling together total different stories than what I'm talking about, total different consequences that you can see that advise us into the future and hopefully give us a better line on how we avoid the damage and the harms that people, certainly corporations, are willing, for a profit, willing to put upon us. For someone's greed, I will commit genocide. For my ability to evade criminal sanctions, I'm going to commit genocide. Wipe a whole people off the face of the earth, and no one's going to stop me. See, if everyone resorted to the black and white and their obligations and duty, that would be solved immediately. And you heard today, they're finally making the point that there hasn't been some genuine action taken. Just what I've been saying. No genuine actions taken to stop this psychopath and this group of psychopaths in Palestine. There's a Palestine sitting in the United States. There's a bunch of them. They're all over the world. You just don't recognize it. This has been BTW RLM 640. And I'll be with you next week, Tech Tips, or nature willing.
Echoes call, the hour is near. Behind the woodshed, the truth you'll hear. Every Sunday, the clock strikes three. Hal's voice flows like thunder, fierce and free. Pull up a chair, lean in close, lessons to learn. Dose by dose, behind the woodshed. No stone unturned, house words ignite, the airwaves burn. Stand up, listen, it's time to learn. Behind the woodshed, where truths are earned. Law to liberty, the spectrum line in house court, no place to hide. A can of whoop bass, ready to burst for unspoken truths and unquenchable thirst. Behind the woodshed, no stone unturned, house words ignite. Next week, heed the call, behind the woodshed standing tall.